We will take up Senate Bill 150. Senator Munslinger, please come forward and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Brian Munslinger, Senator from the 18th District. And it is ironic that actually in one of the towns there in my county, we actually have a flower store in the front, a florist shop, and a gun shop in the back. Not called Guns and Roses officially, but everybody around calls it Guns and Roses. So anyway, just to throw that out here.
Okay, we have now thoroughly exhausted the Guns and Roses thing, so please proceed.
Senate Bill 150 is one that, of course, when we thought that the federal government was going to restrict our trade and ownership in firearms, that I filed, and we don't know what the extent of that will be yet. But this act declares unenforceable federal laws in the state of Missouri that were enacted after December 31st, 2012, that restricts the possession of a semi-automatic firearm or ammunition feeding device, or requires the registration of any of those firearms or ammunition feeding device or firearms accessories, which it is something how you can put something as a handle on a gun, and then it would be possibly illegal to own under some federal law, proposed federal law at this point. In addition, this act makes it a crime for an officer, agent, or employee of the federal, state, local government, or a licensed firearm dealer from enforcing a law or order declared unenforceable by this act when the firearm, ammunition, feeding device, or accessory at issue is manufactured in the state of Missouri, possessed in the state, and remains exclusively in the state. By doing that, it's protecting our manufacturers that we do have here in the state of Missouri. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Senator. I'll start off with the first question. First of all, I want to thank you for presenting this bill. And I guess for maybe if there's anybody in the audience that might wonder why a measure like this would be important, I guess I would just ask you to maybe just say in 10 seconds or 30 seconds, you know, a little bit about go ahead.
Okay. Beyond firearms, it is, I feel, a constitutional violation.
Bingo.
Of the intent of some of these proposed regulations that the Fed is trying to put on our state.
You read my mind.
Okay.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes, Senator Nasheed. Were you going to make a consent motion on this one as well?
If you can get it consent out of this committee.
Please.
And yours as well, because I was in the mindset that.
Are you asking me or the?
Okay, thank you, Senator. You know, there are some Supreme Court cases where it has, but we also have manufacturers here in the state of Missouri that do manufacture firearms and accessories that go on firearms. So if it has never left the state of Missouri, it wouldn't be considered in the Commerce Clause. So I think that portion of the bill would be very, very pertinent. Some of the others may be in question, but as I reviewed some of the Supreme Court cases, but I still think that that section of the law would be very pertinent, Senator. There's a possibility, and you know, it might not be done yet. We might put an exclusionary clause in it. Yeah, I've been thinking about it anyway.
I think if there wasn't a severability clause, perhaps you just thought of putting one in there. And we will, Senator Nasheed, I'll just mention to you that these types of discussions we will certainly have during executive session, and I think all of us will be very very willing to engage in that conversation. I know that the question of the supremacy clause or federal law trumping state is one that we hear quite often in this building, and I don't want to speak for the sponsor, but I think sometimes it may be, in the opinion of some, it might be a good idea to actually challenge that theory, because it is really just a theory until it's challenged, and see how it turns out. So I don't know if that was the motivation of the sponsor, but I think that's certainly a prevalent thought in this building from time to time.
I also want to say we are not the only state that is bringing this bill forward, and it's actually passed in, I know, one other state, but there are several other states bringing this type of legislation forward.
Other questions?
Has there been any other challenge? Has there been legal challenges to it?
Not yet.
States?
They're brand new.
Okay. Are you finished, Senator?
Yes, thank you.
Further questions?
Yes.
Senator Romine?
Senator, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I don't know what your response is, and if you could tell me from the folks in from your district as well as across the state. I was at Bass Pro and Cabela's this weekend trying to buy ammunition for my
Good
pistol.
Luck.
It wasn't there. I couldn't find a holster. There is a major concern of the public that the federal government are trying to take our rights and privileges away. And I think this bill is significant in us making a stand for protecting our constitutional right. And I appreciate
that's true. And like I said earlier, it goes beyond just firearms. It goes at our Constitution and what our founding fathers gave us in the Constitution to protect our rights of ownership and our rights of protection of ourselves, as well as all of the other amendments. I feel this one is very important, the Second Amendment.
Other questions? Anyone that hasn't asked a question yet? Seeing none, Senator Nasheed, please.
So, question though. Federal law, they do background
checks. Not on ammunition. Pardon? The state does background checks, which would go into the federal. Yeah.
Again,
so
we'll,
they want to put in place background. Federal, the feds are trying to put in place.
I think specifically what she might be talking about is the so-called gun show
loophole.
And if would you like to address that, or I can if you would prefer?
You can if.
I think, Senator, I think what you're talking about, and again, some of this we'll talk about during executive session, but my guess is that what you're referring to is the so-called gun show loophole, where if a private individual sells a firearm that they have from their private collection to another private individual, at that time there is not a background check done. Just in an unlikely example, if I was to sell you a gun, there would not be a background check done at that time. But when a person applies for their concealed carry, then through their sheriff's office, a state background check is done. So if they're buying a gun through a dealer, then a federal background check is done at the point of sale. And if they're going to get a concealed carry license, then a state background check is done through the sheriff's office at the time of getting the concealed carry. Did that help you out?
Can I comment on that also?
Please.
That is called the NICS check, the federal NICS check. And one thing about it, and it was described very well as the chairman did, but one thing you've got to remember is criminals won't go through a background check. They'll find some other way to do it illegally.
Other questions? Senator Schaff?
So just to make sure that I understand exactly, you respect the supremacy clause of the United States Constitution, but what you're saying is that the United States Constitution doesn't allow the federal government to make laws that violate the Second Amendment.
Or any of the others.
Or any of the others. And if
especially they, executive orders.
And you're claiming that basically that if they do pass a law or offer an executive order that violates the Second Amendment, that the Supremacy Clause does not apply. And you're saying that if they pass a federal law or executive order which is more restrictive than the law that they had in effect on December 31st, banning or restricting the possession of semi-automatic firearms, ammunition, feeding device, and so on, that that would be violating our Second Amendment rights, and therefore the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution does not apply.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then also, like I said, the other part of the bill protects our state manufacturers of firearms and other...
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good. Other questions for the sponsor? Welcome, Senator.
Oh. Thank you.
Do you have a question?
Sorry, I have commerce going on at the same time.
Please.
And I apologize, Senator, if this question has already been asked. I just want to know about consistency. Last week or 2 weeks ago, you presented two bills in front of the Transportation Committee that was codifying state law to federal law because the federal law had changed, and you were saying that we needed to take steps to make sure that we were in line with federal law. Is this inconsistent with that position?
Do you know of an amendment to our Constitution that those are based on or against?
Well, the one you, that brought up with the 400 pounds to 550 pounds for the idling on trucks, that was just, I believe, a federal statute that was passed. And then the second one was the agricultural driver's license for farm areas, and that was, I guess, in the federal farm bill?
No, it was in the transportation bill.
Transportation bill. Mm-hmm. My point is that, you know, you were presenting legislation that was saying federal law is good, let's codify our laws with federal law, and then here I'm hearing you say that federal laws are bad, let's not abide by them, and if you do abide by them, then there's a penalty.
With all due respect, Senator, I don't know of any amendment to our Constitution along those lines with that transportation bill, either one of those transportation bills that I presented that day.
Okay. Well, I just, again, I understand. I mean, I know your intentions are good, and I just, when I heard you present those two bills in transportation, knowing that this one was going to be before us, you know, I thought to myself that, you know, we're having a little bit of maybe some consistency issues with what we're doing as a body, as a legislature.
I don't see any conflict there at all.
Okay. Thank you.
I might have a follow-up question for that. I was just thinking, I wasn't there in the other committee, and so I can't speak for your intentions nor your actions, but I was just thinking that, you know, one of the things that comes up when we talk about our, you know, the 10th Amendment and the agreement between the states, the several states, and the federal government is that with certain measures like this, at least when I look at what I think your intention is, and I'm just asking you this question so that you might clarify in case I'm off, but I think what I hear you saying with this type of legislation is that when we as a state govern ourselves as a state, as described in the 10th Amendment and the other, you know, founding documents of our nation, when we make decisions as a state, we certainly have the ability to look at something that the federal government has done and make a decision as a state where we say, in this particular instance, we are very much in agreement with the federal government, while in others, we reserve the right to disagree.
Well, that'd be correct. And I think any one of us...
But you didn't let me get to my question. My question is, does that same scenario ever happen between you and your wife?
And that's just what I was going to say. I was just going to bring up that point, Mr. Chairman, that if you've been married, you still live together, you might not agree with everything.
So we understand the concept of sometimes making a decision to agree with a perceived higher power and other times not agreeing.
And you know, sometimes my decision stands, but most of the time it is hers too. So
I think most of our committee members can relate to that. Do we have other questions for the sponsor? Yes. I'm sorry. I'm going to jump to the vice chairman.
So, to follow up on Senator Holzman's point, he mentioned these transportation bills. There was no complaint that the federal law that you were trying to make consistent with the state law, or vice versa, that it was in any way unconstitutional.
No.
Which is the contrasting difference,
right,
in this case. In this case, you believe that the federal law that might occur is unconstitutional and therefore
a violation of our
right.
rights.
And that this supremacy clause doesn't apply. In that case, there is no such contradiction, and you believe that the supremacy clause does apply. Correct? Okay.
Other questions? Senator Nasheed?
I don't even think that's what her bill does. I hope it doesn't pass, but I think hers bans the sale of those. I haven't looked into it to great detail, but I certainly hope it doesn't pass.
It's a ban on the sale, though, not on the possession
right.
of the sale.
And on what?
On the sale. So, in other words, if you already had two or three AR-15s, if her bill was to become law, you would not yet have to give those up. According to that law, it wouldn't make possession illegal. It would make the sale of more of them illegal.
Can't
that's not
unless they obtained it illegally or used it in a crime.
No, that there's not a provision to arrest people that have military style weapons or what they call assault rifles, even in Senator Feinstein's legislation. That provision is not in the proposed law. So his bill would not that. The scenario that you're describing that suggests that if Senator Feinstein's bill was to become law, that police officers would then arrest people for the possession of an AR-15 or an AK-47, that is not the case. That is not in the law that they're proposing. Her law proposes that you would not be able to sell any more of those types of firearms.
So let's individuals that are trying to sell those type of weapons on the state level, they won't be arrested.
Under his law, you are correct.
Mm-hmm. So,
but under Feinstein's law, they would not be. They would not. Feinstein's law would prohibit the sale of that type of stuff. His law says that. Feinstein's law would be seen as null and void in the state of Missouri. Other questions for the sponsor? Senator Sylvie.
So let's say that that we pass your bill, and obviously you were explaining that they wouldn't be in violation of the law for selling because of his law, right? But that doesn't prohibit DEA from coming in as a federal agency, does it? Or how does that work?
Yeah, it would make them actually felons if they were trying to enforce a law that was passed by the federal government. I mean,
so how would we handle that? Because obviously, so like Highway Patrol wouldn't be enforcing the law, sheriff's departments wouldn't be enforcing the federal law, the KCPD wouldn't be enforcing the federal law, but let's say DEA comes in and does a raid, then we are saying that the DEA agents are felons, or so then what do we do with them?
Can I ask you to clarify something? Because Senator Sylvie didn't hear the first part of your testimony where you were mentioning that specifically any new law passed by the federal government after a specific date,
December 31st,
would be seen as unenforceable in the state of Missouri. So laws that are currently on the books would still be enforceable by federal agents, but not new laws that are passed after a date specific.
And those that deal with just semi-automatic firearms, any ammunition feeding device, in other words, magazines, or requires the registration of any firearm, ammunition feeding device, or firearm accessory. So it deals with those specific items.
Okay. And I'm not saying that I oppose the bill or anything like that. I'm just literally wanting to know how it plays out. So feds come in, DEA raids somebody. Now, the according to our state laws, they're felons. What next? Like, does Missouri Highway Patrol then try to apprehend the DEA agents, and then we take them to court? I mean, I genuinely would like to know what the outcome is.
I think the most likely scenario is that the county sheriff would be the one who would be in charge of.
They're the chief law enforcement officer in each county.
Okay.
Other questions for the witness? Seeing none, we're at the point. I'm sorry. Was there another question?
I'm clear.
Good. He's the chief law enforcement officer in each county. And he's elected by the local people.
Other questions for the witness? Seeing none. All right, we're at the point where we're going to call for testimony, and I can see by the size crowd we have and by the clock that we are probably not going to have a lot of time. And so this is what we're going to do in the interest of fairness. How many people do we have by raise of hand? How many people are intending to speak in favor of the legislation? If you're speaking in favor, please raise your hand. All right, so I see approximately 10 hands of those who would speak in favor. What about those who would speak in opposition? Raise your hand. All of you that would speak in opposition, raise your hand. Would you raise your hand twice so that we could try to get equal time here? No one else to speak in opposition. Okay. All right. Well, here's what we're going to have to do. We are literally going to have to limit testimony to 3 minutes. I will use a timer. When your 3 minutes are up, I will ask you to discontinue your remarks. The other thing I would mention is please, everyone, make sure if you would like for your testimony to be of its full value, then please be sure to fill out a witness form so that we might have a record of how many people spoke in favor and how many people spoke against. And also, I would invite or really ask all of you to listen to the testimony of those who go before you. And if someone has said largely or completely what it is that you intend to say, please do not come up and simply give the same testimony again. If that's the case, a me too would suffice and leave your witness form. Or if there's something new or an addition that you would like to say, then please feel free to do that. And
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I do have one key person I'd like to come up and provide testimony. Hopefully there'd be some me toos. He might go over 3 minutes. I don't know, but
who's that?
Jeff Overstreet. If he could come forward.
Please come forward. Mr. Overstreet, I'm sorry I was being distracted as the center was saying. Are you with an organization or?
Yes, I am. I'm one of the owners of CMMG, which is a firearms company here in Missouri.
God bless you. Can you fill out a witness form?
Absolutely. I'll fill that out and submit it to the office.
And I do need to try to keep you at 3 minutes, even though the sponsor would like you to have more. Okay. I do have to try to. No, I haven't started the timer yet.
Okay.
So give me just a second to get to my timer here. And please, if you would, once again, state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Very good. Thank you all, senators, for allowing me to be here. My name is Jeff Overstreet. I'm one of the owners of CMMG, which is a Missouri-based firearms business. We currently employ 50 employees at our Harrod County location and 9 employees at our retail store, which is in Columbia. I wanted to voice our favor for this bill. We've noticed an assault on our industry over the past few weeks. And we've seen a lot of states also criminalizing citizens, companies pushing them away from their states, whereas Missouri in the past has really done their best to keep us not only in the state but encourage us to stay here, allowing our business to continue to grow. Again, we have over 50 employees at the one location. We abide by all federal laws, pay all of our federal taxes, state taxes, withholdings. We definitely play by the rules we want to continue to do so here in Missouri, and this bill, I believe, will protect us and encourage us to remain here.
Very good. See there, he didn't need 3 minutes after all.
Well, that's exactly right. Not only just our company, but subcontractors that work for us in this state, there's probably close to 100 other employees that our company keeps in business also, directly through the manufacturing and finishing out product for us.
Very good. Well, thank you for your testimony. Thank you for being a Missouri employer. And are there any questions for this witness, Senator Sylvie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So real quick, you manufacture here in Missouri.
Yes.
And if the feds passed their ban on sale, but we passed this bill, you would continue to sell here in Missouri?
The way that it sits now, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Schaff.
Let me ask a question of both the witness and the sponsor.
Certainly.
So just to carry Senator Sylvie's hypothesis a little farther, imagine that this law goes into effect and that the federal government does, or the Congress does, pass such a ban and the president signs it so that it does become a federal law, and that you continue to manufacture. And somehow or another, some federal law enforcement agent comes to you and is arrested according pursuant to this new law. And that winds its way through the court system all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, which makes a ruling. You do intend to abide by the ruling of the Supreme Court of the United States as the final arbiter of all things constitutional?
I would say yes.
I was asking, I want to ask the sponsor, really.
Well, I would say probably we would, but we would hope that we would win this case.
Right, because you would, it would be your belief that such a law, federal law, would be ruled unconstitutional.
And with him manufacturing here in the state, with this bill, it would not be, hopefully, in any violation of the Commerce Clause.
So in essence, your bill is really operative, for the most part, between now, the time that it takes effect, and the time that the Supreme Court would rule, and you're really being preemptive, believing that you want to prevent people from having to go through the process of being, you know, dissuaded from doing what their constitutional right allows them to do right up until the point that the Supreme Court rules, and you would hope that they would rule the way you think they will.
We always hope. We never know.
But if the Supreme Court by chance ruled on such a law, you would expect the state of Missouri to abide by it. So you do respect the Constitution.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, other questions? Oh.
Well, what I would like to add to that also is I believe that the reason the Senator and I both agree on that is because we do respect the Second Amendment, and we do believe that it offers and affords us that right, and that these different assaults that we're having on this industry is in violation of that. And, you know, we've seen both the Heller and McDonald cases go all the way to the Supreme Court, strengthening that position of ours.
Other questions for the witness? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Please leave your witness form. And
thank you.
Thank you. Other witnesses to speak in favor of the legislation, just We won't call you by name. We'll just allow you to make your way to the front. We'll begin with you, sir. Please fill out a witness form, and I will begin your three-minute timer.
Mr. Chairman, Committee, Kerry Messer, representing Missourians for Personal Safety this morning. My intent is to be brief and not to go too long. Missourians for Personal Safety is a consortium of Second Amendment concerned organizations around the state, and they all consider this bill a high-priority bill. I can be available to senators. I'm sorry a couple of senators had questions or, you know, had to step out, but I can visit with you guys later. We got a lot of people here that probably want to say something. But I would say this, you know, considering the national political landscape right now, The Second Amendment community does feel threatened, and that's why this bill is important to them. There's this outstanding question that I want to address just real briefly that has come up here at the latter part of your discussions with the sponsor over, you know, how would this interact between state officials and federal officials? No one really knows how that's all going to play out. The sad thing is, as a state, we can't go to the United States Supreme Court and ask them to issue us a decree that tells us what we can and can't do. The only way we can do that is to pass a bill, create a statute, and then when the conflict occurs, then the Supreme Court, you know, as the case goes up the ladder, will give us some guidance. The Supreme Court is not going to give us guidance unless we pass this legislation. So I would say this is the only way we're going to know who has ultimate authority in this situation. We all have our ideas and our beliefs and our understandings. The Supreme Court will be the final arbitrator, and we need to give them that opportunity. Thank you very much.
Very good. Questions for this witness? Senator Schaff.
So the alternative is that the federal government passes a law, which then the violation of that law is appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court rules. One way or the other, that's got to happen.
But in the meantime, the citizens of the state who have a representative government
protected.
Would the Second Amendment groups in Missouri want their elected members of the House and Senate to represent them in this matter and say, no, as a state, we want to assert ourselves as a sovereign state and not wait those years of lapsed time.
So if the law, the federal law that's passed, worked its way up and it eventually was found unconstitutional, then this law would have done its job.
Correct.
And remain in effect.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for this witness?
Thank you.
Thank you.
In a kernel part, I want to point out to the committee that I had to swear an oath to the Constitution of the United States, and that oath said that I would defend the Constitution from both foreign and domestic enemies. In my training as an officer, I also had ingrained in me the fact that if I am given an illegal order, I am obligated to ignore it. That brings us to this particular piece of legislation, and it has everything to do with an illegal order. Now, I say that because these orders that has brought this to the forefront are an abridgment of the Second Amendment. They are illegal orders. Now, if you go back in the history and you see what our founding fathers were talking about, Thomas Jefferson, in his Kentucky Resolution of 1798, brought out what he had been thinking for many years. And that was, if you were to get a political organization and they took control of the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch, and to face it, the judicial branch can be taken over because the Supreme Court is political appointees. So they could take over the entire government and start issuing laws that violate the Constitution. In that case, Thomas Jefferson's theory was the only way you could combat that is for the states to bring out their sovereignty and say, we will not obey an illegal law. And when you pass a law that violates the Constitution, that is an illegal law. And is it incumbent upon each state to pass their law saying that they will not comply with an illegal law? And that is what this is all about. So I implore this committee and this Congress of Missouri to take charge of the state of Missouri and tell the federal government, no, we will not comply with an illegal law or directive.
Thank you. That was perfectly timed testimony. You had 22 seconds left, and it was very, very good testimony. Thank you for that. Please fill out a witness form, and do we have questions for this witness? Any questions for this witness? Thank you for your service in the, did you say Army? Lieutenant Colonel in the Army?
Lieutenant Colonel, 28 years protecting this Constitution, and I have not quit fighting to protect it.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, and thank you for being here today. I believe you were next, sir. Please state your name for the record, and I'll start your three-minute timer.
Thank you, sir. I have filled out a witness form. My name is Mark Perez. That's spelled M-A-R-C. I'm here as an individual, not representing any organization, nor am I a lobbyist. I'd like to read, if I could, to quote from the Missouri Constitution, Article 1, Section 23, the right of every citizen to keep and bear arms in defense of his home, person, and property, or when lawfully summoned in aid of civil power should not be questioned. It goes on to talk about concealed carry, but that's been determined by our Missouri Supreme Court and our wonderful legislature 11 years ago. Missouri is a sovereign state. Our sovereignty is important. The federal government, in their attempt to circumvent our state sovereignty, exceeds, if I can use the word, the enumerated powers of the federal government. That is to say, they do not have the authority under the Constitution to override the Bill of Rights. The Founding Fathers, when they wrote the Constitution and their interpretation of it through the Federalist Papers, made it extremely clear that this country was to be run not from the top up, but from the citizens through their legislature to the federal government, giving the federal government specific duties and specific powers. That is, they are not to legislate down to us, but we are to, they are to enforce the Constitution, and we are to send laws forward to promote the safety and security of the state and the members held within. So I hold that the federal government, to draw their, from the executive branch, should draw their own interpretation of what should be allowed under the Second Amendment is wholly and completely unconstitutional. Do you have any questions that I may answer for you?
Very good. Thank you for that testimony. Do we have questions for this witness? Very good. Very well stated. Please leave your witness form with us, and I believe you are next, sir. And so that leaves us with an empty chair for one of the people that would like to be in the on-deck lineup to come on up quietly while this gentleman gives his testimony. Please state your name for the record, and then I'll start your timer.
Yeah, I'm Jerry Bryan, and I'm a private citizen of Missouri, not speaking for any group. And I have put my witness form up on the table. And I just want to add to the last two speakers that spoke. I've got a lot more here, but I'll just add some of the parts that they didn't cover. It's the states that created the central government, not the other way around. It's arrangement between both parties, and both parties have the right to dispute disagreements. It is not, if not, one of the parties becomes a dictator. In the case of the central government, if we allow the exclusive right, them the exclusive right to decide what powers they have, and it is the central government's discretion to administer such powers, then the central government becomes a despot and the states become slaves to the central government. In the case of the central government, who put the Supreme Court in deciding all cases about the Constitution? And that's where we talked about the Supremacy Clause before. And it's Marbury versus Madison in 1803 when the Supreme Court itself decided they were the final arbitrators to decide what was constitutional. But the one point I would like to make about that is the Supreme Court, what did they do right before the Civil War? They said slavery was okay. We had a Southern District Court that freed Dred Scott, but we had the Supreme Court who put him back in as a slave. So I think we as Missouri citizens have a right to what the two previous witnesses were saying, is that we are a sovereign state. The federal law is not supreme over us, but we're partners in this situation. And the court and the federal government cannot dictate to us what powers they don't have. If they do, then they become usurpers if we allow them to come in and take the rights and the powers that we're supposed to have as sovereign Missouri citizens. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Do we have questions for this witness? Any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Thank you for being here today. And that opens up another seat for someone to occupy in preparation to testify. And I believe you were next, sir. If you would state your name for the record and be sure to leave your witness form, and I will begin your timer.
My name's Steve Gergerich. I'm speaking as a private citizen. I'm retired military. I've served in the Missouri National Guard for 22 years. Served as a military policeman. General comment is, I believe that the federal government is becoming too intrusive into the Missouri lifestyle, Missouri values, and Missouri culture. Missouri is becoming part of the great flyover land. Legislation at the federal level is being legislated for our populated areas. The state itself is sometimes legislated for our populated areas. And the will of the people, the majority of the people, the quiet majority, are being subjugated to a lot of dictates that are presently coming from the federal government. As it's been pointed out, the Supreme Court is an appointee position. It's pointed out that as being appointed, it has to be approved by the Senate. Our federal Senate sometimes doesn't act in the goodwill of the people. The federal government is running amok, from shutting down commerce to legislating laws that allow, such as a free trade agreement. Yesterday in, I believe it was Utah, we had a bus accident, Mexican bus, failure of brakes, life and limb, state properties damaged, state funding to clean up the mess. It hasn't been proven that the vehicles have been unserviceable, but we faced with ongoing federal law that says we're encouraging trucks to come from the south. That's commerce. In the event that the federal government shuts down our state gun manufacturers, who's going to pay that bill? Who's going to represent the people who go on unemployment? And at what point do we say that the federal government has become too intrusive in our lifestyle? We have a vote. We can't even be assured that the vote is right because we can't get our act together when it comes to voter ID laws. The president himself had to show an ID law so he could vote, and then he joked about it. I'm not a fan of the president. I'm not a fan of this administration. I'm sometimes not a fan of this state government that we have. But I do know that if this law is passed and we argue the case up to the 10th Amendment as in being states' rights, and the fact that the Supremacy Clause of the Supreme Court, just as that gentleman pointed out, we have a kettle of fish that need to be sorted out. That is all. I am in support of this law.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your service in the, did you say National Guard?
Yes.
Please stop for just a minute. Sorry. We'll just make sure we don't have any questions for you. Do we have questions for this witness? Anyone? Okay. Sorry to make you sit back down.
No problem.
Thank you for your testimony, and I believe you were next, sir. If you would, did you fill out a witness
form? Yes, sir, I did.
And if you would, just state your name for the record, and then I'll start your timer.
My name is Glenn Crawford from Crockle, Missouri. I'm a private citizen. Two tours in Vietnam, Boy Scout leader, Eagle Scout, Hunter Ed instructor for the state of Missouri for 18 years. Leave the Second Amendment alone. Thank you.
Very good. Very well said in a very short period of time. Thank you, sir, for your service. Do we have questions for this witness? Being none, thank you. And did I already ask you about a witness form? I'm sorry. Okay. And
good afternoon,
Senator,
Mr. Chairman.
I believe you are next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You do understand that you will still be held to the same 3 minutes.
3 minutes? I've never done that before, Mr. Chairman, but I'll do my best. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Lemke representing United for Missouri and our 66,000 members across the state. We want to go on record in support of this legislation and thank the senator for introducing it. If I may, with all due respect to Senator Schaaf, I'm going to agree with Thomas Jefferson and not the good senator in that he thought it was a foolish doctrine to assume that the Supreme Court was the final arbiter of what was constitutional, and that was Thomas Jefferson. I agree with many of the those that testified that said that the Supremacy Clause certainly deals with issues that the federal government is handling that are constitutional. But anything that falls outside of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the Supremacy Clause is null and void. It doesn't apply. So in this case, it's incumbent, I would hope, on our General Assembly to pass such legislation to force the hand. This is not just happening in Missouri. It's happening all over the country. The states have to stand up to tyranny. They have to stand up to an out-of-control federal government that's stepping over its bounds. All we're trying to do here, and we need to do it as states, as a dual sovereign. I mean, Senator, just think, as a dual sovereigns, if you and I got into a disagreement and I said, well, let's go and have my mother be the arbiter of who is right and who is wrong. I mean, would that be okay? I mean, that's what we're doing when we let this, when we let the federal government use one of its three branches to decide in a dispute between two sovereigns. So I believe that it's incumbent upon us as a state to stand up, be stand in the gap on behalf of our citizens, and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have questions for this witness? Yes, Senator Schaaf.
You wouldn't be surprised that I have a question for you.
Okay.
You know, we took our oath of office to uphold both the United States Constitution and the Missouri Constitution. And, you know, there is a mechanism for the determination of what's constitutional. And right now, the accepted mechanism is that the Supreme Court rules on that. Now, the mechanism that would come later would be, what are the articles of, what am I thinking of? Articles of something. Of what?
The Federalist Papers or no?
What is it? Mr. Calzone knows what I'm talking about. But anyway.
No, I don't. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
I think you do. But anyway, the thing is that this bill only takes us as the first step, correct? Anything beyond the point when the Supreme Court rules is not addressed by this bill. What you're talking about is the theoretical possibility that were this bill to become law and the federal government extend its overreach, that and the Supreme Court rule against what you believe is the intent of the Constitution, then that would have to be addressed by some other act of this legislature, correct?
Well, let me go here, Senator. I believe that if you really study history and study our founding fathers and see the debate that they were having early in the process as far as how much power should we give the federal government, we the states that created the federal government, they're the creature, we're the creator, all right? And they had these debates. Should we be giving the federal government this much power? But, you know, an interesting debate that they didn't have was they all pretty much agreed the judicial branch would be the weakest of the three branches within the federal government. They never envisioned that this thing would evolve to the point that we see it. And it's because the states have sat on their hands over the centuries. It's because the people have not rose up, to take hold of the rights that were given them, given them by God, not by government, and that's the problem. So I think what you see happening, and not just in Missouri, you see it all over the country, is the awakening of a sleeping giant, where the people says these rights are afforded to us by God. We form government for the sole purpose of protecting those rights, not for taking those rights away from us. And I think it's been very eloquent here expressed today, the idea that this is clear. It doesn't take a tyrant in a black robe to tell me what the Second Amendment says. It's very clear that Congress shall make no laws restricting this right, which is in our Bill of Rights. So,
well said.
Thank you.
Other questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Please leave your witness form. And is there anyone else to get into the lineup here, or have we reached almost the end? It looks like we have last but certainly not least, Mr. Calzone. Please leave a witness form. State your name for the record, and I will begin your timer.
I'll have one. For the record, my name is Ron Calzone. I'm one of the directors of Missouri First, and frankly, I was initially rather troubled with the direction that the testimony was going, because it seemed like we had some people too willing to capitulate to illegal acts by the federal government, and I think that former Senator Lemke quite eloquently expressed my concerns. I do want to point out what the Supremacy Clause actually says, and it's very short, so if you'd bear with me. It says, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. So that means that if there's a federal edict, that's not really a law at all because it's not a lawful law, that's not made in pursuance of the Constitution, or it's not under the authority of the Constitution, then there is no Supremacy Clause application. So, to illustrate that, let's say that I can't pronounce Fidel's brother's name. Raul, is that how you pronounce it? Let's say Mr. President Castro decides that he's going to dictate our speed limit in Missouri. He says, you know, you guys are driving too fast. You're going to now have a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit in Missouri. What are we going to do about that? We're not going to get all upset and consternated. We're going to probably laugh at him. We're going to tell Mr. Castro to go pound sand because he has no jurisdiction in Missouri to tell us how fast we can drive. If the governor of Delaware issues an executive order and he tells us we have to drive 40 miles an hour, we're going to tell him the same thing because he lacks jurisdiction. The federal government, has been mentioned already in testimony, lacks jurisdiction to tell us what kind of firearms we can own, what kind of firearms we can use, what kind of firearms we can possess within the state borders of Missouri. Period. I would suggest that, although I commend the sponsor for this bill, he's taken a courageous stand, that this bill doesn't actually go far enough. If we want to be principled and we want to apply the principle accurately and consistently, we would recognize there's no jurisdiction for any federal gun control laws. We can handle gun control in Missouri statute quite well, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you. Please be sure to leave your witness form with us. And very good. Do we have questions for this witness? I'm sure that the questions would all be very polite after you made that last statement, but I don't think we have any for you. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else to speak in favor of the legislation? Going once, going twice, anyone else in favor? All right, now those who would speak against the bill, please come forward. Is there anyone else besides this gentleman to speak against the bill? Yes, we will have people speak for informational purposes only. Sir, I'm going to do something outside of what I would normally do, and just in case there's anyone wondering for future hearings, this is not the way it will normally be done, but since you are one and only one, I will give you 5 minutes where everyone else has only had three. So please state your name for the record. Be sure to leave your witness form, and I will begin your timer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I won't take up 5 minutes. I come to you. I'm Caleb Files. I'm from Kansas City. I'm a gun owner, and I respect guns. I'm coming to you. I'm a political science student at the university, and I understand the Constitution and the constitutionality behind this. The problem with the practice of nullification is that it rejects both the constitutional tenets that validly enacted federal laws are supreme over the state laws, and that it is judges, not the state legislators, who determine whether those laws are valid, and it is not in our system of checks and balances. But a law such as this authorizes state legislators to review all federal legislation as a matter of course would open the door to much broader swath of radical and defiant action, which is what James Madison warned that nullification would speedily put an end to the Union itself, because it would allow the states to simply ignore any law that they want. If we were to refer to the Constitution, we'd quickly find that this bill violates the Supremacy Clause, as we've heard, which states that duly enacted federal laws shall be the supreme law of the land, and that it trumps state laws. This means states cannot nullify laws or arrest officials for enforcing them simply because lawmakers do not like them, or even because they make their own determination that a law is unconstitutional. Members of the committee, you took an oath to uphold the laws of the Constitution of Missouri and the federal Constitution. When you uphold the laws of the Constitution, you must uphold it in its entirety. If we want to change the Constitution, an amendment to the Constitution needs to be proposed then. And 38 states must agree to change that to ratify the Constitution. Missouri cannot change the Constitution by itself and cannot override constitutional law without severe consequences. We have seen the consequences of a state trying to nullify federal law in Arkansas in 1957. In violation of Brown versus the Board of Education, the governor of Arkansas prevented African-American students from entering a high school they had constitutional right to enter. And President Eisenhower sent in troops to the high school to enforce the federal law and to allow the students to enter. If we allow this law to enact, it would be to say that if, such as what the Senator Sylvie said, that if a DEA agent were to come into California, Missouri, and were to arrest somebody based on these laws, that the county sheriff could put that person into jail, and that clearly is not okay. I respect you all today, and I ask that you vote against SB 150.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. And did you leave a witness form? Okay, very good. I don't know if I would classify these as questions, but I think since you're the lone gun on this deal, I'll maybe just have a bit of a conversation with you that would be along the lines of questioning. We've heard a lot today, both from you and proponents of the legislation, about the Supremacy Clause. And so I think it would be fair to say that you hold an opinion that would be different from most of the other people that we've heard from so far today concerning the Supremacy Clause. But one of the things that I did hear in common that you had mentioned, that also those who were of a different opinion than you mentioned concerning the Supremacy Clause, was that the Supremacy Clause applies for laws that are properly enacted or duly enacted by the central government. And so we've had some people today say that the Supreme Court should be the final arbiter in those cases, and then we've heard others say that the Supreme Court should not. I'm guessing, based on what I think I heard you say, that you would be of the opinion that the Supreme Court would be the final arbiter?
Okay. That's correct.
So if we take your position, would you be opposed to the idea of this law going ahead and moving forward so that we could have that conversation with the Supreme Court? Or would you be opposed to – would you be – it would seem as though that whether a person would be of your opinion or the folks who spoke before you, that we would almost all be in favor of seeing this measure move forward so that it could go to the Supreme Court, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
I don't feel that it should be enacted. I feel that if we should challenge the law that's being pushed on as the United States are been put forward, rather than allowing this law to be enacted.
And challenge the law in what fashion?
Challenge the constitutionality of the federal law.
So maybe an individual person
Correct.
Saying that their civil rights have been violated by that law, and therefore bringing a suit against
such as a yeah. business owner, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I guess maybe what's happening here today is there are some folks that think that maybe a two-pronged approach would be better. And the last thing I would ask you is there are some here today who have made very clear arguments that the law that could possibly be coming out of the central government, we don't know yet whether or not it will actually become law. But there are some who have said that law would clearly violate the Constitution. Is it your opinion that the Feinstein law or a Feinstein-like law would be within the confines of the Constitution, or do you believe it violates the Constitution?
I believe it's within the confines.
Within the confines. Okay. Okay. I that would probably be all my questions. Yes, Senator Schaff.
So. Basically, it was articles of nullification that I was thinking of earlier. And are you claiming that this bill amounts to articles of nullification?
I believe so.
Hey, but don't articles of nullification come after the Supreme Court rules? So that if there were a law, and it it ultimately was ruled on by the Supreme Court, and we, the state, felt that the Supreme Court ruled that something was constitutional when we believed that it really wasn't, as in this case, it would be that the federal law was a violation of our Second Amendment. Isn't that when the state would then file articles of nullification and actually just, you know, draw a line in the sand at that point?
I believe I interpret it differently.
Okay, you interpret it that these amount to articles of nullification.
I do feel that.
Okay, well, one of the things that occurs to me is that if we do it your way and say that we're going to wait for the federal government to pass this law, somebody violates it, and then is charged by the federal government, that's going to have a lot of effects. I mean, it's going to cost that person quite a bit of money to defend themselves. I mean, you know, it takes a lot of money. I mean, the federal government gets away with a lot of stuff simply because people don't have the resources to fight them. You agree with that?
Yeah.
Well, one of the aspects of this bill is that it says any person charged with violating the federal law or executive order may request the attorney general to defend such person. So that would be reasonable, wouldn't it, that particular aspect?
I don't agree with that at all.
And, well, I mean, if we, the people of Missouri, feel that, you know, the federal law passing this kind of a law would be unconstitutional, then don't you think it's reasonable for we, the people, to allow us to defend the person who we believe isn't really violating and that, you know, the federal government thinks they are?
I mean, I think if it's we, the people, then put it to a vote of the people. I mean, I don't feel that a committee voting on a bill is we, the people.
Well, you know, we don't get the opportunity to go to the Supreme Court and ask them what the answer is. We have to wait for the federal government to pass a law, and then once they pass it, somebody has to violate it, and somebody has to go to jail or go to court, and then that has to go to the appellate court, and then the federal court, and then the Supreme Court. I mean, that takes a long time. It could be years. And during that time, there could be a chilling effect on the businesses in Missouri that deal with the firearms, couldn't there?
I haven't seen a monetary number of how much.
Well, I know, but I mean, if you were the gentleman who testified first, who has a manufacturing plant, during that whole multiple year period, he wouldn't be able to manufacture weapons. So don't you think that it's reasonable for us to preemptively say we're going to protect his business while we wait for the Supreme Court to answer?
No, because I don't think that if I don't foresee the bill or the federal mandate or the federal actually going through. I think that this bill is overkill and we're overstepping where we should be, and we should wait to see if it does go into effect. And if it does go into effect, then we file a piece of legislation similar to this.
So if the federal government does not overstep, then this bill is totally of no effect.
Correct.
So why are you afraid of it? I mean, you just got done saying you don't think the federal government will do it. I mean, a lot of people in this room think the federal government will do it. So if you're right, then there's no need for it. If you're wrong, then there is a very big need for it.
I just disagree with the constitutionality of it.
Okay. Well, very good. Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Romine.
What's your basis for feeling like the federal bill goes against the Constitution, Second Amendment?
I don't feel that the federal bill goes.
Well, I mean, why do you feel like it's okay for the federal law to be passed and it's not in opposition of the Second Amendment? I guess that's a better way to phrase it.
I'm not for sure. I don't have that. I haven't thought through that.
Other questions? I would suggest that the Constitution would be worthy of considerable thought.
Well, yes.
And let me just say this to you. I appreciate the fact that you're here. I do. I mean, to come in a room like this with, you know, I look around the room, I see some kind of mean-looking guys, right, that absolutely disagree with you. So I appreciate you having the fortitude to come and do what you believe in, okay? I don't agree with you, but I appreciate what you're doing. When I talk to people about this kind of stuff, you know, one of the things that I think is – is worthy to do is to basically take a person's position and then draw it out to some ridiculous yet perhaps logical conclusion. Okay, we do it all the time in this building, and one of the reasons that we do it is to try, although sometimes very unsuccessfully, we try to think of what the unintended consequences might be, right? So one of the things that we have to do is in our mind, we have to set up a whole track of dominoes and try to say, okay, well, if this domino falls, then it's going to hit this domino, it's going to hit that domino, and basically draw things out to their logical conclusion. So I'm going to give you a scenario that I think fits what we're discussing here, even though it's kind of a bizarre example, and I pray that it would be something that would never happen. But what we've heard is for you to say that, you know, federal law is supreme and that the states should not be defiant. I think you actually used the word defiant of the federal government. And so I want to hear you just kind of walk this through. Tell me what you think. If the federal government was to, you know, whether it would be in this session or next session, the federal government says, well, we've decided that actually slavery is okay. And it's passed by the legislature, it's signed by the president, and now there is a federal law that says slavery is okay. What would we do? I mean, what would we do as a state if there was just something, and I purposely think of an example that is something that I think would be just absolutely sickening to any of us in the room. I just tried to think of something that would be something that all of us would agree about, right? We all agree that slavery should never be reinstated. We all agree that slavery, it would make us sick, right? But I guess my real question is this. How far does the federal government have to go, in your opinion, a person that thinks the way you think, how far does the federal government have to go before we stand up as a state and say, no, we are nullifying what you've done because what you've done is unconstitutional? Do we just wait? In the case of slavery, would we wait for the 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 years that it would take to play out in the courts, or would we make a move on our own as a state?
I think it's a totally different situation.
Very different.
We would move, in my opinion, move swiftly before, if we had knowledge of it coming through.
So there is a line in the sand somewhere,
correct,
for you,
yes,
where you would say it is appropriate for the state to step up and do what the state believes is in the best interest of the state.
I think the morality of that question is a lot different than the question at hand. And that would determine the line in the sand.
Yeah, I think everything about that question is different. But what I'm trying to establish is the fact that what I think I just heard you say was that there is a line in the sand. Somewhere there is a line in the sand where you believe it's the right thing to do for a state to stand up and basically defy the federal government.
It's a pretty far line, but I believe yes.
Okay. So as long as we agree that there is a line, then maybe what we've determined today is that we just simply disagree on where that line is.
I believe that's correct, sir.
Okay. Any other questions for this witness?
Yeah. What if the Supreme Court changed and there were 5 members of the Supreme Court that ultimately ruled that the Second Amendment only applied to keeping guns for the militia purpose, and that every citizen had to give up his or her weapons as they did in Australia? How would you feel then?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Well, why not? I mean, like,
'cause I would like to walk out of this building alive.
Oh, no, no. I respect you for coming. I'm just wondering. I mean, but if you don't feel comfortable answering, then.
You can make your own assumptions from the answer I gave.
All right. Any other questions for this? Again, I do appreciate you being here. And did you say you're in political science right now?
Yep. I'm a pre-law student.
It's a bad career field. All right. Did you have any other? Oh, I'm sorry. Those who would speak for informational purposes only. I almost skipped you. Are there others that would speak for informational purposes only? Okay, let's let this gentleman go first, since he's the one that reminded me that we should do that, and then we'll be happy to hear from you. Are there others that would speak for informational purposes only? Okay. Sir, please state your name for the record. Be sure to leave a witness form and proceed.
I'll be happy to. My name's John Davidson. I'm from St. Louis. I'm here this morning because I'm involved in the very early stages of the drone industry. And it gives me a very unusual perspective where I want to lay a little hypothesis. And then I'm perfectly happy to answer the question about where I think ultimately we're going to end up as a society about this. I very much appreciate the comment someone made a minute ago. To be very specific, those of us who are lawyers by training, the Second Amendment does not give you a right to bear a firearm. The Second Amendment gives you a more important right, the right of self-defense, of which the firearm is only, and Missouri ruled on this in 1857, as the United States Supreme Court recognized, a firearm can only be used under the Second Amendment in a situation that makes it necessary to use a firearm. And so the reason why I mentioned drones is that the use of personal drones, and I won't take the time to illustrate the very small devices that are coming that are going to provide an extraordinary array of personal services, are going to become a substitute for firearms. As a consequence, we are here having a debate that in the future people are going to look back on and say, how unfortunate for a lack of patience. It is not that there's not a right to self-defense. It is that we've isolated it on this fascination with guns rather than paying attention to the more fundamental proposition of self-defense itself and how it will play out in our society. Now, the reason why I mention that and why I think it's important to have that dialogue is to understand the legislative capacities here in Missouri. I think in light of the case that I just talked about a minute ago from Missouri in the 1850s and it being so settled doctrine here, that a question, a very substantial question, exists about the ability of the legislature here to pass firearms laws that are more than necessary. The Missouri Supreme Court in 1857 used the exact phrase, and by the way, the case is referred to in Note 9 of the Heller opinion. They said that one could not use self-defense unnecessarily. And so when you're considering legislation of what sort of firearms that people should bear, I believe that state law limits your capacity to act. And that is that at some point there are boundaries of what firearms people may have to execute their rights under the state constitution for self-defense. I think that in the legislative process, you have to be cognizant that we have a state judiciary that has a role to play in this, and that a state judiciary can very easily say that a law that permits carrying of a concealed weapon in inappropriate circumstances, carrying of a weapon that has the intent, for example, to intimidate people at a public meeting. There are all sorts of questions that exist under state law that are wide open that have never been discussed because we all know the history of the jurisprudence. We all thought that we had left this behind us when Wild Bill Hitchcock had to check his gun in Dodge City. And so I think that the, for lack of a better way to talk about it, is there's a tremendous amount of emotion. There's a lot of miseducation. Exactly how far these rights extend has not been determined. The Heller case itself said there's not a right. It didn't say there's a right to a machine gun or a clip or a rifle or anything else. The case said a handgun. Whether the federal courts will say you have a right to more than a handgun, I don't know. Whether the state of Missouri, state Supreme Court, is going to say there's a right to more than a handgun, I don't know. But I'm suggesting to you that there are limits, and that because there are limits, the question should be directed towards how do we protect the fundamental right of self-defense, which is a broader right, I understand, and how do we promote that and look at these questions? In other words, I don't see how we're
accomplishing
anything.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have questions for this witness? Thank you for your testimony, and please leave your witness form. Do we have anyone else to speak for informational purposes only? That was you, sir. Do you have a witness form? Okay. Please state your name for the record and proceed. Thank you for your testimony. Do we have questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you for being here today. We want to thank all of our witnesses, everyone who has testified today, and we will go back. Did we have anyone else to speak for informational purposes only? Sir, I'm sorry. I do. Senate rules just don't allow for that. I apologize. Any other informational purposes only? Those who have not testified. All right. Thank all of you for your testimony today. And if you did not actually come forward and testify, and you do have a witness sheet that you'd like to leave with us, we will be collecting witness sheets. I would imagine some of the committee members may be able to interact with you on a personal basis if you'd like to maybe ask more questions or have more conversations with committee members after the committee meeting. But with no other, and I'm sorry, Mr. Sponsor, did you have any other closing remarks? That we do that in this committee. We let the sponsor just have any closing remarks at the end if they would like to. It's all been said. Very good. Well, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Thank all of you for being here with us today. That will bring this meeting of the General Laws Committee to a close.